Hi, and welcome back to Science on Trial and Error. I'm Kasia Kuźmicz-Kowalska, and I'm excited to kick off our new season by introducing our first guest. This season, we will talk a lot about career, and when contemplating a career change, several questions invariably arise. What drives me? Where do I see myself in 20 years? And what do I need in my work to keep me going? These questions aren't easy, and the answers can be different as they are influenced by our current life situations, past experiences, health, aspirations, and so on. For a long time, my personal drive, at least in part, stemmed from the desire to garner external validation, to make those around me proud and happy. But as I approached 30, I found myself at a crossroads, uncertain of what I truly wanted beyond these external expectations. It's good to stop and think about your motivations from time to time. And if you need an incentive, this interview will lead you there. Our guest today is motivated by a profound desire to give back to her family, to her community, to society at large. Meet Rose de Guzman, a passionate advocate for making science more accessible. As product manager, she works to make researchers' life better. And through her mentoring initiatives, she wants to empower women scientists and help students from historically marginalized backgrounds find their path. Rose's journey began in the Philippines, where she witnessed firsthand how poverty stifled educational opportunities. Moving to the US at a young age, her family became her bedrock of strength and motivation as she pursued her scientific endeavors. She holds a Bachelor's of Science in Nutritional Biochemistry from UC Davis in California and proudly stands as a first-generation PhD holder in Behavioral Neuroscience from University at Albany, New York. She then continued as a postdoctoral research fellow at the Massachusetts General Hospital, Harvard Medical School in Boston. She is a recipient of grants and awards, author of numerous publications. And beyond her academic achievements, Rose is a founder of two impactful mentoring initiatives, Women in Neuroscience, dedicating to advancing women in the field through focus groups, webinars, and workshops, and Pathways to Science and Medicine, fostering connections between MassGen, Harvard Medical School professionals, and Bunker Hill Community College students from underrepresented communities. So, what makes someone who has a good chance of becoming a PI leave academia? How to deal with imposter syndrome during big career transitions? And what does a product manager do? We discussed these and many other questions in this episode. Expect laughter, honesty, but also tears. Oh, and book recommendations, of course. As Rose said it, sometimes it only really takes one person to change your path. Enjoy and welcome Rose de Guzman. Hi, Rose. Welcome to Science on Trial and Error. It's very nice to see you. It's very nice to have you join me today.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
How are you?
Did I see that correctly? Is it 9:30 p.m. your time?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for being so flexible.
It's totally fine. I am actually a very evening person, so for me it's okay.
Oh, nice.
No worries.
Perfect.
Where are you currently, actually?
I am in the Boston area, Massachusetts.
And how's the weather?
Freezing. I went out to brunch with my friends this morning, and it was 15 degrees Fahrenheit, feels like 2, and there was a 1 hour wait, and so okay. It was freezing.
Yeah, here it's not so bad, actually. I know that Austria should be, you know, winter paradise, but Vienna has had, like, literally 2 days of snow, and
Wow.
That's it. So it's been fairly warm, surprisingly warm. So I'm not complaining, honestly, but I would like to see a bit of white once in winter. Okay, so I'm very happy we will get to chat today. You're going to be our first guest in the new season, which goes beyond academia. And I'm very excited that we will actually get to know you better. And just to give a brief intro, you are a neuroscientist, or actually trained in many sciences, but neuroscience, I would say, is one of the key things. And you are also very involved in mentorship, and now you transition from academia. You may be known for some of the listeners from social media as Rose Neuro.
Yes.
And I would be very happy to hear about what you're currently doing, which is already outside of academia, right? As we kind of discussed before.
Yes, I recently transitioned.
So what are you doing right now? Let's start with this.
Okay, I am currently a product manager at Evident Scientific, which was formerly known as Olympus.
The microscopy.
Yeah, microscope,
company, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. And so it's newly named as Evident. But people always say, no, but we used to be Olympus, still same microscope, still same people, just different name. So I am currently a product manager for the North America and South America for this specific microscope systems. And it's really cool. When I did an informational interview before I got the position, just so that I can learn a little bit more about it. And the word that really intrigued me was that it is a renaissance position. You're basically involved in so many different aspects of the company, and that was so exciting to me.
Yeah, this sounds really good.
Yeah, I get to work with like in the sales, marketing. I also get to communicate with folks in Japan, and then preparing conferences and talking with a bunch of people, just wearing different hats. At the same time, I'm so new that, and yet I have like the biggest like microscope system.
Oh my God.
And so it's been really fun, really challenging in a good way. And so, yeah, I'm just really enjoying it so far.
I love what I'm hearing. I recently transitioned to a new career as well, and I also work as a manager, but not of a product, but of a consortium. And one of the things I was worried about was, will I feel challenged enough, you know, outside of academic position, and will I really get to learn new stuff? And from what I'm hearing from you and also from my experience, actually, it ends up being equally challenging, right?
Oh,
and
yes,
equally exciting, I would say.
Yes, definitely.
So do you still get to learn new stuff about science as well? And do you feel like you are experiencing enough of this, you know, learning process that we researchers like a lot?
Yes, I needed to learn a lot about microscopes, especially like fluorescence. And recently I wrote this article with a coworker, and it is on autofluorescence. We deal with that as researchers too, right? We try to capture an image, and yet there's like this autofluorescence. Like, how do you get rid of that? And so just even from writing that article, I really needed to learn, okay, what is even like autofluorescence? Like, I knew what it was, but to like, what are the wavelengths? And so it's been really challenging in that sense. The other concepts that I am currently learning are the legalities of things and working with other companies, third-party vendors, because I manage over 20 vendors. And so there's just a lot of learning, and really, how can we provide the best tools for researchers? And it's really nice being a researcher myself, or at least being a grad student and a postdoc. I know what it's like to be in a dark microscope room for hours on end. And so when I'm thinking about new products, I often think of how can we make the lives of researchers better and more accessible, ensuring that everybody can do their work in an efficient, fast, and really accessible way. Been really exciting that in that sense.
I guess the perspective of doing it yourself earlier really helps. And then you get to give back a little bit to the community to help people with their work, which is also a nice aspect. I like this. This sounds really cool. I mean, it sounds really, really exciting. And honestly, I can see that you're like into it. But how was it at the beginning? Were you stressed that you don't have the skills? Because I guess this is something that a lot of the people who transition are facing, this uncertainty whether we have the right skill set and the right toolbox to really work in such a different capacity.
Oh, definitely. There are specific moments in my life when I have experienced imposter syndrome, and it usually happens during big transitions. And this was definitely one of those. When I did the informational interview, the person said, you know, I think you might be a good fit for this position. And I said, are you sure? Because I don't have any product management experiences. I really don't. And the people who encouraged me to apply, they said, well, you might not have product management positions, but you also have other experiences outside of being a postdoc, outside of being a grad student. And one of those was actually, so in grad school, my husband and I started a music business. Mm-hmm. It's an artist management business. We managed artists and we put on music festivals, and that was super fun.
It was, wow, that's so cool.
A lot of like no sleep, of course, because in the during the daytime and weekends, I would be in lab, and then at night and also on weekends, we would be doing concerts or working with our artists. But that also took knowing marketing, because
yeah,
I was the
sure,
marketing director
course.
Of our business. So, okay, I can use that experience. And then during my postdoc, we started this initiative, Pathways to Science and Medicine. So that involved communicating with a bunch of different people and then also learning how to sell this initiative to MGH so that they would adopt it as their actual program. And so I really tapped into all of those different experiences, even though they weren't directly part of my grad student and postdoc experience, I guess. Those were things that I didn't realize actually helped me get this position. And they did, surprisingly. I guess surprisingly, not surprisingly.
I can understand that. I mean, me myself, when I made a decision that I want to finish my academic endeavors after the PhD, I was a little bit freaked out at first because I thought, okay, I did a bunch of different things on the side, but nothing per se which would maybe make me a manager. And then when I interviewed, yeah, for instance, doing this podcast suddenly was something that matters because you have to manage so many different things and you have to be in communication with different people and you need to mm-hmm. do a little bit of social media, a little bit of, you know, management as well. So I didn't realize that I have these skills. And I think this is something that I kind of found out through a reading of other people's experiences and realizing how many transferable skills we have.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Did you have any support transitioning from your postdoc into this job when you started looking for new positions in how to reshape your resume and how to change the way you think about your skills? Did you go into any career advising or did you get in contact with someone who is a coach in this direction?
That's a great question. And I really struggled with that too, because I knew how to write an academic CV like really well, and I had that down, but to modify it and revise it so it's not academic and it's more industry, I was really lost for the longest time. What I ended up doing was I actually, you know, looked it up on Google what examples are, and then I revised my resume and I sent those to friends who are already in the industry, and I asked, would you mind taking a look at this? I'm really interested in this position at your company or at this other company. And then they gave me feedback in terms of how to revise it. And a lot of it is not many people really care that you published 20 articles or you did this many bullets for each position. It really is, what are your skills and what can you bring to the company? And so it was a tapping into my network, my community, and then revising it that way. Yeah, and just looking up online. But it really was trying to get feedback from people.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't even know at first what I want to do. So I...
Yeah, that was the toughest part. Exactly.
You know, your first idea is like, okay, industry means going into R&D in a biotech company.
Yes,
and
yeah.
I wasn't really sure I want to do this. I kind of wanted to step right. outside of the lab. So yes. I also talked to a couple of friends, and yeah, there was one person who worked as a project manager, and we were discussing it, and I was like, look, I feel like I don't have enough experience. Also, I was certain that you should be first a postdoc, and I didn't really want to do a postdoc. So, mm-hmm. yeah, talking to your network is a very good advice, I think, and trying to research different resources to figure out how yeah. to reshape and find the right wording, you know, to be...
yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, there's so many resumes that they receive. You need to manage
exactly.
to get through this. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And I like what you said too, because I honestly didn't even know what positions I could even apply for. The only position that I thought of after postdoc was scientist, scientist one, scientist two.
Yeah.
And those were the things that I focused on until someone mentioned, well, hey, how about project manager or product manager? And I'm like, really? I don't think I'm qualified for those.
Right?
And then once I started
yeah.
applying, it seemed even more attractive and exciting. And so, yeah, it's definitely tough though.
I agree. So how long ago did you start in this position?
I started in October.
Same.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah,
really?
Nice.
Yeah.
But before that, maybe I spent a year or so doing informational interviews and just really assessing if leaving academia was really the right path for me. So I did do a lot of informational interviews before that.
Yeah, I think it really takes a while. I started looking more seriously in January at different positions. So it took me also around a year. And yeah, I think it's important to understand that this usually is not like a very sharp change in your way of thinking. It's more like you start to consider it and you need to realize what's out there.
Yes.
So what made you think about not continuing in academia? Because I mean, I looked at your resume, Rose, and it's pretty spectacular. And I think you probably had a very strong chance that you could have become a PI if you wanted to. So I'm curious what prompted this.
Yes, that's a great, great question. And it's one that's honestly the hardest to answer, because for the longest time, I thought I would be in an academic route path. And one of the reasons why I wanted to be in academia was I love the mentorship aspect of it and wanting to change the nature of academia, because it can be a very, very tough environment, right? And my overall goal was, how can I make change from within my own lab? You know, make change from within and hopefully spread light or joy or
yes,
that
of course.
Spark within science again. So it was really, really tough decision. And I just realized that, you know, I think I can still continue to make change outside of academia. I felt that I was pretty good on a bench, you know, doing experiments. But I also wanted to see if there are ways where I can pursue science without needing to do in vivo experiments or in vitro experiments while still mentoring others. And in my position right now, I really do feel that I can make a wider difference by helping. I call people who use our microscopes as like the heroes. You know, I'm
yeah.
equipping them with the best tools I possibly can. And my role is to ensure that all of these people who are making a huge difference in the world are getting the tools that they need now. And research is being done really well. With good tools, you can increase reproducibility and
sure.
standardization that way. And so I really shifted how I wanted to think about it. So that was great, where I'm still indirectly involved in advancing science in that aspect. What I really wanted to make sure, though, is that I don't lose that aspect of mentorship, because I really do believe in mentoring students and future scientists. And so I then tapped into really communicating with bigger audiences. Like for this one, I'm really just thankful, you know, to be part of this podcast so that I can, maybe my story can help someone, or that's my hope. and really meeting with more students, and then tapping into more leadership roles, like being part of a board of a nonprofit organization, and then now an editorial board for a neuroscience mm-hmm. journal. So still being able to mentor and do this, all the different things I loved about academia in a non-academic setting. And I know that's a roundabout answer, but yeah, like I try to choose like, yeah.
No, it totally resonates with me. It resonates with me. I had very similar feelings. I felt like my experience during a PhD was quite a rough path. So mm-hmm. now my role in the consortium is also, there will be 10 PhD students that will be within it. And I would yes. like to kind of be there to support them as well. And I like this aspect. I like the fact that maybe I can be helpful to make their adventure in science better and yes, to influence exactly. their experience. I really like this, how you phrased it, to support the science and the scientists, but not deal with all of the, yeah, the things that we didn't like about academia, right?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
The list that became too big to... I mean, for me, I was very... how do I say this? I was very one-sided. I saw myself going this path, and then when things started to be completely different, suddenly the illusion kind of fell down, and I was like, wow, this is right. really worse than I thought, in a way that it's very hard to fight these battles alone, and it's very hard yes. to change things when the system is so, you know, so set in stone. And
right.
I admire people who stay and who continue with their soul not damaged, but I found it very difficult. And I felt like I'm not sure really if I'm liking science anymore, which to me was a little bit, yeah, heartbreaking. But I feel like I do. Yeah. So thank God. It was more like the academia was really weighing on me. And that's why I wanted to really now shift the podcast in this direction, because I felt a little bit alone at first. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it's a bit of a failure, because this is how we are trained, that if you leave, right. you are yes. leaving academia, which to me sounds like you're dropping out of school and in something
right.
bad. And
right.
I want to make it very clear that there's so much cool stuff beyond academia that are still exactly. cool science, and you can use what you're good at and still give back.
Yes.
So it doesn't have to be, you know, yeah, you just go and you leave it behind. I like the way that yeah. you want to give back, and I just feel very inspired by this.
Yeah, and I think that it's the aspect that if you leave academia, then have failed. That was a huge turnoff for me, because academia is just one pathway, one path to doing good science. There are many yeah. different paths that you can take to still continue to change the world for the better. It's just one aspect. And I think that was really disheartening when, if you talk about wanting to explore different pathways, that, oh, okay, you're leaving academia, then I won't share resources to you because you're not going to be in academia anyway. Whereas I don't think that that should be the case. And so that's where mentorship really is truly helpful. And if I decided to go back to academia, I think I might still have a chance. And I mm-hmm. and to have a non-academic experience would equip me to be even more, I guess, capable of mentoring students who want to focus on other careers. They're like, oh yes, well, if you don't want to stick with academia, that's great. And then if they want to do tech or industry, then I can provide my experience if I do decide to go back to academia.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to also position myself where, if I do decide to go back to academia, that on my CV, it shows, look, I'm part of an editorial board in your science journal. I've continued to do mentorship. I'm still publishing and part of boards. And so I'm trying to make it so that my options are still open in that sense. But we'll see.
That's very smart also, because one of the things that I think are lacking in academic setup is that a lot of the people who become group leaders, they lack managerial experience.
Yes.
And this is something that is very difficult, but this is something that is not required when you become a leader of a group, and suddenly mm-hmm. you have to work with people who work in a very different ways, and even if you're a brilliant scientist, you really need to know how to manage people, how to inspire people, how to work with different types of personalities. And I think this experience, definitely, as you said, might actually make you better should you decide to to go back.
That's true. And that's a great point too, because in all honesty, one of my fears as well, if I stayed in academia, was becoming a PI that I did not want to become. In that, if I have my own lab, and regardless of my intention of providing a good, safe environment and trying to change from within, what if, I don't know, I would never want to ruin someone's passion for science. And I would never want to be that PI. So in a way, that also was a fear of mine. Mm-hmm. of starting my own lab. And I'm not sure how big of a factor that was in contributing to me leaving academia, in that I don't ever want to be a toxic PI or create a toxic environment for my mentees and for my team. But yeah, that was also an ongoing thing for me, is that I would never want to ruin someone's career, self-esteem, or any of that. Like, I would never want to create a toxic environment for anyone. So yeah,
if people who think like this continue leaving academia, that's a sad version of the future. But I really think what you're saying is a very important point, that, you know, having experienced or even just heard of toxic situations, one way is, of course, to just go away from this. And mm-hmm. I'm honestly not judging anybody who decides to do this. And another way is to try to fix it from your side. And being aware of this, right, and speaking about this is very important, because this vicious circle of toxicity where, you know, you were exposed to toxic situation and then you feel like you survived it and this means this made you good, mm-hmm. is one of the things that I think is really wrong with academia. Because then these people become PIs and then they think that because it made them where they are, it's a good way of training, right. And I'm very scared of this, so I wish we could kind of break this by speaking about this and being more open. So I agree,
like breaking the transgenerational trauma,
exactly,
exactly.
I agree. So in short answer, if you were to shed a light on one aspect that you think is a very important thing that should be improved, either to help people to transition and make them feel better about going beyond academia, or to make it easier to think about alternative career pathways, what would you say is a key thing for you that should improve?
Yes. I think that there should be options in graduate school to do internships outside of academia, say work for the government for a summer, or work for an industry for a summer or a semester. I think those are great options to incorporate in programs that will allow students to truly explore what aspect of science that are interesting to them.
Yeah, I love this. And it shouldn't be really that difficult, because, I mean,
right,
in general, it's a short time, so you could make it a part of the project that it kind of becomes valuable.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends who went to business schools, and as part of their curriculum, they had to do an internship. So one of my friends did an internship at Disney, really enjoyed that, and is now a director at Disney.
Love it.
After graduating. So, you know, it's a great opportunity for people to truly explore, and it shows, oh, there's different pathways beyond academia to pursue science.
I like this.
And I feel like I can just go to a coffee shop and chat with you.
That's a good thing. That's what we are going for. I love it. Okay, so a question that I like to ask people who I know laugh and they are doing good is, what did you learn about yourself in this process? What was for you something that you discovered about you in making this decision? Because it's a big decision, of course.
Yes. Ooh. That's a tough question. The first thing that pops in my head is that I was true to what I did not want to be doing, and really pursuing something that I felt good about. Mm-hmm. It was tough because it truly narrowed down my options. I did not have many options because I initially thought of, okay, just focusing on my PhD and my postdoc topics, which was maternal health, right? And or postpartum mental health. And surprisingly, and not surprisingly, there aren't many companies here that actually focus on that, which is very, very, very sad. And so there was actually a part-time position that I wanted to apply for, and I did not get the position. And I was heartbroken. And in hindsight, it actually worked out really well because it was a part-time position and there weren't really any benefits either, except for that the company focused on postpartum depression, say. But then it also turned out that they laid off a ton of people within a month or so after I did not get the job. And it also made sense that I did not get the position. Oh, this is one thing that I did learn is that whenever I got a rejection from a job, I would ask them, what was it that I was rejected?
Yeah,
and,
smart.
Not to like, why didn't you accept me?
No, just really, to like, improve.
Yeah, to learn. Yeah, like, how can I improve, you know, during this interview process? And then it worked out that then I got this position. Well, yeah, so one of the things that I learned is that I guess I'm qualified for more than one position, I guess. And I did not know that. That is a very simple answer. But yeah, that, oh, I can be a product manager? Okay, cool. And I just go with the flow and do my best and see where this takes me.
I'm sorry about the question. I just think it's an interesting realization that,
yeah,
you know...
Yeah, it's a great question. And like, I never really thought about it.
You can kind of trust yourself a little bit more suddenly. And everything that you've learned... I was kind of scared, you know, I've learned so many things. I was working in developmental biology, but it doesn't matter now that I can dissect mouse and chicken embryos when I'm applying for a position as a manager. But all the other things that we kind of soak in are relevant. And it's not that everything that we did suddenly becomes useless, because that's what I was a bit concerned about. I spent a long time doing my PhD, actually. Mm-hmm. It was like a bumpy road and it took me 7 years since the beginning till the end. And I was like, oh my God, I wasted 7 years and I should use it somehow. I like this answer. Yes, I think we can now go a little bit around about other stuff, because I would really like the listeners to find out a bit more about your other initiatives and just you in general. But before we go to this, I want to ask you, because I know from your profile that you are a first gen PhD, and I love this. I love the fact that you push and get this done. I'm also a first gen in my family, and I know that this carries a lot of difficulties, of course, and hardships. But I feel like there is a lot of power in people who do this, and I think there's also a lot of power of your family behind you. And I would like to, if you don't mind, go into the direction of source of your passion for science, also who inspired you to go through with all of your education, and just in general, how did it all start?
Yes, I think it all started really in the Philippines, where I was born, and I was surrounded by so many brilliant people, but that poverty really hindered them to pursue education. So my father's father, he was this great entrepreneur, despite not learning how to read or count, but he knew how to count cattle with his fingers and his toes. And that was how he went around selling cattle. And then I think like he was selling timber. So yeah, that was like a cute story that my aunts would say, that he didn't know how to read or write, but he could count with his fingers and toes. And that was how he made business and raised my father and his 10 siblings, you know. It was like a big family. And now their kids are flourishing. And then my mother, the highest grade that she got was in elementary school. But she's such a passionate caregiver. She's a caregiver now here in the U.S. My father is a brilliant engineer, despite not having an engineering background. But he uses just that brain of his to build stuff for his company that he's working at right now. And so I learned at a young age, and what was really instilled in me by my family, is that education truly is what will help and what will help my family, my community, and myself really rise from the poverty level. And so that was really what pushed me to reflect and like, what is it mm-hmm. I wanted to do? And one of the things I remember writing down on a paper, I think when I like flew here in the United States when I was 7, was I want to build a clinic in my grandma's village because the like the closest hospital is too far away, right? You have to like walk a long time, catch the public transportation to get to a hospital. It's like a 2-hour trip. And that was one of the things I wanted to do, was build a clinic in her village so that people wouldn't have to like die going to a hospital. And that recently happened to me a year ago. Like my aunt needed to go to a hospital and she basically, like, I'm sorry to make this story morbid, but she basically died in transit. And I said, this is so recent. Why is this still happening?
I'm sorry.
So my family really does have a huge influence on my passion for pursuing education and helping others. And as an immigrant story, I was separated from my immediate family for 10 years. And then we all came back together in California. I live with my parents and my youngest brother. And then my youngest brother was also born. But while my mom was pregnant with him, you know, we didn't have much resources, but I was taking child development and nutrition courses at my community college. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, we might not have much money, but I want to make sure that my mom is eating the right food and to make sure that it's a good environment. And then when my brother was born, I really tapped into my child development courses and nutrition courses to make sure that he had a like stimulating environment. I was always talking to him, giving him educational toys. And then when I knew that they were safe and good, then I could then leave to go to pursue college. Get my bachelor's. So I transferred from a community college to UC Davis, and I chose nutritional biochem because in my family, we had cardiovascular diseases, mm-hmm. and I wanted to learn how to stop that cycle. And I was like, I want to learn how we can live long lives without being dependent on medication. But it wasn't until my last semester when I learned about neuroscience, and it was nutrition and aging. And I was like, oh my gosh, we can have long lives, but if the brain isn't there, then blah, 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 blah. And so it was like a light bulb
click.
Moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it clicked. But I think I took a neuroscience class. Maybe, I don't even remember, but I did take a lot of psychology courses and I really loved those. So after I graduated, I joined a neuroscience lab at UCLA. My boyfriend at that time, who is now my husband, he transferred to UCLA. And I said, well, if we're going to move to LA, I want to work at UCLA. That would be so fun. And cool. So I got a lab tech position at UCLA. I was there for a few years. My PI was amazing, Tad Blair. But it was primarily more of artificial intelligence, place cells, and in vivo electrophysiology, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But I really continued to be interested in maternal brain health and also child development. So then I got my PhD that way and got my PhD in neuroscience. Yeah.
I love this story. I mean, it's so driven by your experiences and your family's experiences, and it's so life-changing. Your whole family mm-hmm. moving, and it must have been really difficult. And I guess this also is a little bit behind your mentoring initiatives, right? You want to
yes.
make it easier for everyone else. And you mentioned the Pathways to Science and Medicine that you,
yes.
you started. I love this idea. Love, love, love. And I also saw you started the Women in Neuroscience community as well, which I also always support, right? This is something that is always necessary. So I wanted to expand into this and ask you, you mentioned that you see yourself in this role very well and you love doing this. How do you think your past experiences affect the way that you want to mentor people? So what is the key thing that you want to help people with? Do you want to help them in choosing the right path? Do you want to help them in understanding the challenges of the scientist career? What's the thing that is the most important for you in these initiatives?
Yes, I think one of the most important things for me, especially at the community college level, is sharing all the different pathways that people can take, especially at that level. Because when I was at the community college, I went to Santa Rosa Junior College in California. The only two paths that I knew was become a nurse or become a physician. Yeah. I really didn't even know anything about becoming a scientist. Like, I knew we were reading about all these stuff in textbooks, but it didn't really click to me that, oh, scientists do those work. And it wasn't until I transferred to UC Davis when one of my teacher's assistants, one of our TAs, Dr. Kaylin Hines, she came up to me and said, hey, Rose, do you want to be my research assistant? And I'm like, I don't even know what that means. What's research? What's a research assistant? And I said, well, I really like talking to her. She seems really great and very patient answering all of my questions.
Yeah.
And so I said, yeah, sure, great. I'd love to be a research assistant. I'm like, I still don't know what that means. But I think the important part of that story is that it only really takes one person to change your path. And for me, it was Kaylin Hines, because after that, I was just engrossed. I was like, whoa, my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, research world. I did not know anything about research world. And so I was only at Davis for 2 years, and I knew that I was behind. And so then I joined two other labs. So I was like three labs and just learning as much as possible. But I really think it just takes that one person to give that encouragement to change someone's path. And so at the community college level, it really is showcasing all the different paths that you can take. You don't just have to be a nurse or a physician. And there's nothing wrong with those careers, but it really is, what are all the different options? And then once students are in graduate school, the important there is, how can I help them survive grad school?
Exactly.
and thrive in grad school. And so, yeah. And then after that, it's either, okay, do you want to stay in academia or do you want to choose other paths? So I think it really is, I try to be that guidance with whatever path people want to take.
Without judgment, right?
Without judgment,
this
exactly.
This is something that I have been mentoring a few students when I was doing my PhD from younger cohorts, and they went through different situations, and I always tried to be there without the judgment that they were receiving from everywhere else. And I think sometimes that's enough. Like, if someone wants to leave their PhD and this feels right for them, why not help them to still make the best out of the time that they spend doing it? And I feel like there's so much stigma around certain things that having a mentor who is not judging you for your decisions is a very key thing. These initiatives, are they local? Are they online? How does it work if someone were interested in, you know, looking into it?
Yes, yeah. Women in Neuroscience, we started that when COVID happened. And one of the key reasons why it was started was there was this article that showed publication number from men and women scientists and how the publication dropped for women scientists. And a lot of that is, you know, taking care of families at home, right?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So one of the key things was, okay, how can we provide resources and platforms for women in neuroscience, perhaps even giving a talk so that they can continue to add stuff to their resumes and CVs despite publication decrease, whatnot. So that is primarily online, and we are on hiatus at the moment because our group, they're all graduating from PhDs. So we wanted to give them the time to focus on getting graduating from PhDs. And then for Pathways to Science and Medicine, that is more locally based in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. It is connecting Mass Gen Hospital people and Harvard Med people with community college students at Bunker Hill. So that's been a pilot project where we'll start with Bunker Hill Community College, which is the biggest community college in Massachusetts, and then expanding that way. But the overall goal for that was truly to encourage folks in the Harvard community to go beyond helping the Harvard community. Spread the wealth and resources and, you know, jobs to other people. And so that really is more locally based, but I really do hope for that to expand.
It's clear that you're driven by something more than ego and ambitions, which is a common disease in academia, a sad disease in academia. Yeah, I'm very glad that you get to help people and you have this drive. And I really hope that in the future, whatever it will be, whether it will be academia or non-academia, that you will just get to do more of it, and that you can share your experiences, which is a great thing. Yeah, I guess I wanted to go now a bit more into the future direction, maybe a little bit like feasible goals, of course, on one side, but then just going a little bit more on a dream type situation.
Yes.
Would the dream be to go back? Would the dream be to just be able to mentor more people? What would be the thing that you would like to do? Would the dream be a company maybe, or something else? Like, what would be a thing that you would like to do? Just like all doors are open. What's the thing that would be fun? I mean, it's not binding. Come on, just go for it.
Yeah, exactly. Oof. I've always wanted my own foundation. That's been a really top goal of mine that is focused in the Philippines. And I think that I can attain that sometime. but it really is to help more children that way. What really makes my heart bleed is when I go to the Philippines and I see children out on the streets. And I'm like, they really should be at school learning and just really flourishing that way. I get teary just even thinking about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it really is to tackle poverty and provide a chance for children back in the Philippines. And one of the things that I have learned, especially as a new mother, is my daughter loves to read. And I think that really has helped her brain develop really well. And so maybe if we can establish through this foundation, creating libraries so that all children can have access to books and helping, you know, provide scholarships and just anything to help alleviate the effects of poverty on children. Giving them shoes so that they can go to school like really proudly and buy their uniforms or something, just like very basic things that you would think but are tremendously helpful, or even like installing fans in their classrooms. That's one thing that my dad and I are working on in the next few months is installing electric fans in the classrooms in my grandma's village in the elementary school there. So yeah, so that would be a foundation. That would be a dream of mine. And then another one is if I continue down the route of product management, I don't know, work my way up sea level. And then one thing with that is I can then use my increased salary to then fund this foundation.
Yeah, of course. And that's my goal. Be a dream.
Yeah, exactly. That would be the ultimate dream. And yeah, and just continue doing outreach work. I think that foundation is like my ultimate dream. And that would be amazing. And then bring that over to the United States too, because there are also a lot of children here, you know, affected by poverty. But a lot of it revolves around children, and I just want children to reach their potential regardless of where they're born.
To have a chance. Yeah, of course.
To have a chance. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
It sounds
I'm getting teary.
I know. It's making my heart grow, and it's also making me sad at the same time.
Yeah.
To think that there's still so many places where education is not a basic thing available to kids.
Yeah,
and there can be so smart kids and, you know, they just like, don't get the chance to do this. I love this. I really hope that you can get to this point. I will be your biggest supporter, honestly, in this. And,
because one of the things I think about is that, like, I'm no smarter than these kids. I just got lucky. And that really is a lot of it, and just not taking things for granted. All of the stuff that have come my path is that I just take on the opportunity because there are so many people, so many of my family members who are still in the Philippines who would love to have these opportunities. And so I try to be mindful of all the things I have access to and to not take them for granted. And yeah.
Yes. Look how far you are already on the way. Every step that you take is bringing you closer to this, and this is fantastic. And of course, it really also relies on meeting the right people and having the dose of luck as well. But you're doing everything in your power, and I am very happy for you, and I hope all goes well. I mean, this is very inspiring, and this is very beautiful and also really sad. But I really hope that you get to do what you want to do. If you are aware of any, you know, NGOs on or something that mm-hmm. can allow people to support a goal that you are supporting yourself, please let me know and we can share this in the episode.
Because
it's always good to get all these charities exposure as well. So do let me know if there's something that you would like to share as like a additional thing.
Thank you.
Wow, I think we are closing in. I just got a little bit like emotional.
I know,
now.
It's like, yeah.
I had a question that I wanted to go into the closure, which I think would work with you very well. I wanted to talk about books. So one of the things that I'm really passionate about are books. I mm-hmm. actually plan to do a little bit of a spin-off of the podcast that is book-centered. And the question that I want to ask my guests this season is a book that you'd recommend either for everyone in science to read or just in general for people to read. Something that is important for you, something that changes perspective. I'm sure you will have something to say.
Yeah, I just shared a couple of books on my Instagram.
I've seen the one about Henrietta Lacks, which is a brilliant one, right? So
yes, yeah.
That's definitely one.
I think that should be a mandatory read for all scientists and med students, just so that we can learn from history and how to do it better in the future and now.
Yes, cautionary tale.
Then, yeah, exactly. And then the other one is Mommy Brain by Dr. Jody Paluski, and that primarily focuses on basically mommy brain and the policies that have also gone into. It's only been very recent where NIH even allowed for or implemented the use of like female brains and like female behavior in studies. And yeah, I think that is a great book, especially for those who are interested in starting a family and learning more about themselves too.
Okay, I will add it to my reading list now because I'm definitely curious. So this will also be in the description in case somebody wants to pick it up. And I don't know, I love this interview. I wasn't sure how it will go with, you know, just navigating this new structure of the season. But I feel like it's going to be good for people to hear where else can you go and how many things you can do outside of academia that are just equally interesting and cool. I'm very grateful you agreed to do this.
Oh, thank you, truly. This has been really fun.
I really loved it as well. I wanted to ask for like a final thought with which you want to leave the listeners about anything. Just your final thought and something that you want them to think about or consider.
I would say to not self-reject, in that if you want to pursue something, go for it. Let others say no to you, but most importantly, don't say no to yourself and don't self-reject by not taking action. I think the first step of pursuing your dreams, pursuing a goal or whatever it might be, is to take that first step, and only you can decide to take that. So I would say go for it, you can do it, don't self-reject, and go with the flow, have fun.
I feel like women in general tend to do it a bit more than men, so especially to female listeners, but in general people can find you on Instagram. I'm so grateful that we get to do this. And I'm looking forward to hearing you in a while, you know, where you are and what's going on. And thank you so much for sharing your story. I really loved it.
Thank you. Thank you, truly. This has been so fun. And I can't wait, you know, chatting with you in person over coffee or tea.
We should definitely do this. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Please,
yeah, that'd be awesome. If you're in Boston area, we'll definitely get
I will keep that in mind. And if you come through Europe at any point, also.
Thank you.
Let's just see each other. Thank you so much, Rose.
Thank you.
All the best, really.
Thank you. You too. Thank you so much again for this.
Thank you for being so honest and so open. And I always appreciate it when people do this, because I feel like this makes it much more meaningful.
Same. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for this new season and it's gonna be really fun. But yeah, this has been really wonderful. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.